I think that the great IRR in AI is going to dry up financing for these white elephants. As in, you know, who is going to give the state of California or even the federal government money to waste on something when you have such better return on capital projects that are just sitting out there begging to be funded?
$100 billion into Louisiana for thousands and thousands of Starship launches annually. And Figure releasing Index, the largest database of robot training data. Brett, let's start. You put out a great piece and tweets on how monumental this investment into Louisiana is. What's the right way to think about it?
Yeah, I mean, relative to history, this is one of the largest infrastructure projects of all time. So, you know, you really have to go back to the U.S. highway system. The U.S. highway system was like $700 billion plus in 2026 dollars. This ranks ahead of the giant hydropower dam projects in Brazil and China in terms of scale of its ambitions. The International Space Station, adjusted for real dollars in like a, call it sectorally comparable scenario, is $200 billion, so not quite that big. But the real question is, it's like, why are they building all of this stuff? You know, this is like a huge slug of money to go into Louisiana. And it, one, there's like a useful reason to be there geographically. To launch for AI satellites, you basically need to go due south. And so you need a launch location that gives you a stretch of water over which to launch due south. In this case, the Gulf of America, formerly known as Gulf of Mexico. And Louisiana has a lot of natural gas, and you need the natural gas to convert into methane to fuel the rocket. So actually, the scale of the launch they're trying to do requires a lot of raw materials. And three, you know, SpaceX has such, as we model it, extraordinarily high return on capital potential for its stacked businesses, initially for Starlink, where we think return on capital for like the 10th Starlink rocket launch will be 100% annualized. And the return on capital for the 100th AI satellite will not be as good as that. It'll be like high 20s, but that's because we think they're going to use most of that capability for internal R&D to get themselves caught up to the frontier. But by the 1,000th AI satellite launch that goes, not the 1,000th launch carrying AI satellites, we think, you know, returns will exceed those of Starlink. And so then they no longer are capital constrained, because capital will flow into the business to try to fund these opportunities. They're launch capacity constrained, or they're basically launch and manufacture and all of the things that would get in the way from them continuing to grow constrained. And so this is one of many very, very large chips they're putting on the map of the U.S. to try to address and dissolve those constraints to growth.
I did like in the chart, the California rail, you know, the quarter mile of track leading to nowhere is a estimated $125 billion project. So our ROIC, extremely important when putting hundreds of billions of dollars on the table.
You know, and it's actually, I think that the great IRR in AI is going to dry up financing for these white elephants. As in, you know, who is going to give the state of California or even the federal government money to waste on something when you have such better return on capital projects that are just sitting out there begging to be funded? And so one of the, you know, things I was posting about over the weekend is the idea that the AI and the growth in AI, the amazing economics of AI, are going to pull a lot of businesses that don't seem to be contra AI exposed offsides, because their ability to finance is going to dry up. As in, the data centers, Tesla's IRR on its terrestrial, sorry, SpaceX's IRR on its terrestrial data centers looks like it's on the order of 75%, meaning they can invest, you know, $30 billion in building a data center. And, you know, net of all of the costs, you know, the return on that 30 is like 1.75 times 30, you know, going out, compounded. So it's an amazing business. Clearly, you know, you want to have capital attached to that kind of investment. And if you are over there getting a puny 10% IRR on another project, you'd rather have it there. And so then to finance it, SpaceX might pay a higher rate. And that's how they'll suck the money out of those projects, including, you know, maybe the government borrowing rate has to go up, accommodating the fact that there's such obviously much better returns in a sector that can soak up huge hundreds of billions leading into trillions of dollars in capital.
Right. That's my question here is, okay, there's always a capital cycle. And is the claim here just that it is a super cycle because the amount of capital needed is so much higher than anything we've seen before, where you can dump, right? We'll touch on TerraFab in a second, but it's like you can dump $1 trillion into something with good return on capital, theoretically, without the diminishing returns that would typically kick off a capital cycle.
Yeah, I think you framed it a little awkwardly in that it's not the amount of capital that's required, it's the amount of capital that can be accommodated to meet these needs. As in, you could starve the industry of capital in some way. You know, maybe you starve it of capital because it's basically like you only have certain sites you can build. And if you build in a 10th site, suddenly you have to pay like 100 times as much to build there. And so then you're just like stuck on those 10 sites that you can build. And then the ultimate revenue opportunity would be smaller, but at higher margins. So the IRR on those 10 sites would look tremendously amazing, but then you couldn't take in another dollar. Here, the promise is that, Anthropic and SpaceX both identify that AI enterprise knowledge work opportunity is, you know, on the order of $30 trillion, which I'll talk through how to get there, but it's non-insane. I think there's reasons to believe that's true. To support that kind of IRR, you need trillions of dollars in underlying infrastructure to be developed, actually to continually reinvest in that every year. And so that becomes, if you look at like the global corporate bond market, it's $10 to $15 trillion. If you're doing, you know, multiple trillions into this single thing, then it's necessarily going to rob kind of money from other corporates who are like, hey, I'm used to paying like, you know, 100 basis points over kind of like the government borrowing rate. Why do I have to refinance at this higher rate? This breaks my business model. And so it's kind of like the volume of capital that can be deployed against this with seemingly very good IRRs is what makes this cycle different. But I do think it's a cycle. It is inevitable. It is inevitable that kind of like money will flow in to fill up the opportunity until returns begin to saturate. Here, it's hard to at least like figure out where that tipping point could lie, given kind of like the ability to underwrite, you know, these very, very large markets pretty easily.
Yeah. And I feel like this was an anecdotal interesting point was OpenRouter, when they discounted certain models by 50%, the volume throughput increased 14-fold. Right. And these models are falling 99% in cost annually. So,
right. More than that, actually.
Yeah.
And that's the it's kind of very clear that the industry has pierced through on the enterprise software layer into kind of this pocket of not infinite demand. Nothing is infinite, but extraordinarily large demand relative to how big the industry is now. And so the $30 trillion number, a way you can back into that is businesses historically pay 10% the value of their the productivity they get out of software, as in they buy software and they capture 90% of the surplus for themselves and then pay 10% out to the software vendor. Well, knowledge work wages are roughly $30 trillion. They're heading towards $40 trillion, but right now they're roughly $30 trillion. So if you can uniformly 10x the productivity of knowledge workers and businesses pay out 10% of that, then you end up with a $30 trillion number. The other way to think about it is like if you look at the kind of software space and where this stuff really, really works, and look at startups and they're paying as much in wages or as much in AI token spend as they are in wages, Well, if that's how all businesses are going to migrate, that would be, I have a $30 trillion wage bill and a $30 trillion AI bill. And so that also kind of tracks. So I think that's the a reasonable way by which to bound the system. I don't know another way, but there's you know, downstream of that, there's all of the embodied robotics, there's all of biology, you know, there's plenty of, there's, you know, the consumer and indirect monetization angles, there's plenty of other mechanisms by which these computers are going to be put to use. And so I think the challenge, I think it's very readily dimensionable, kind of that this infrastructure will be built and have very good IRRs, and then the return will then attract more capital. It's the size of the industry and the size of the capital required may actually be the gating factor to some degree, in that there's inertia in capital allocations. And so you could have a extended period where you have unfairly high returns in putting capital into this industry because people are continually skeptical of kind of like the next year of growth. And so it, and it's hard to tell when or how you would unlock kind of like the capital cycle in a more profound way, given just how ginormously large this is in a global context. And one of the mechanisms by which to do that is say, hey, compute is an asset class and we can collateralize debt directly against the chips, which is what they're trying to do. And so then you can begin to provide a permission structure for capital to flow outside of core tech investors, but from like general allocators into this specific sector. But that'll take time. So we'll see.
Okay, so then a rising tide lifts all boats, but an AI riptide sinks them? Or does this favor and benefit big companies that have free cash flow that can invest in this opportunity or dictate their own growth far more than someone relying on capital? What's your take?
Well, what's your take? What do you think? Does a riptide destroy all boats except one?
I don't think so. It to me is like, okay, this is bad. It's okay, we're not going to fund your CRM Salesforce killer because, well, Salesforce exists. It's like the moment of disruption. I think, let me frame it. It's a huge moment of change and everyone wants constant disruption. But I think as the riptide begins, the disruption stops for a fair amount of time and favors those that have already gone through this huge funding need, right? And that's not to say the ones at the lead will be at the lead forever, right? Like the giants always fall. But it seems as though in that moment, or however long it takes for it to shake out, it'll be extremely difficult to take down any established company with solid cash flow.
I think having liquid cash to invest, and if you're having liquid cash to invest and the will and wherewithal to aggressively invest it kind of into AI, is, you could argue, is actually the only kind of business strategy that will work here. You either have to be in the value chain where you get sucked forward by AI in some way, like think Stripe, or you know, they're trying to position themselves in front of it, or think you know, some of the people providing, think Boom Aerospace, which is selling its engines directly into powering AI data centers on the way to developing a supersonic aircraft. So you either have to do that, or you have to have liquid capital and ability to shift it into AI. If you have fixed assets that are chugging along and presenting you with what you think is very good return on equity, that are debt financed in some way, or even equity financed in some way, then you could have your multiples just collapse on a relative basis and kind of have trouble rolling any debt. And so insofar as you have fixed assets that can't be converted into this, then suddenly you're stuck on something that's not working. And so how does that manifest? It's your employees get restless and pissed off because their neighbor, who happens to be working for the company that's selling to the AI value chain, is getting, you know, ridiculously absurdly rich, and they're still up there like, you know, going to collect their every 2 week paycheck. And your kind of debt financing mechanism could totally break because they want 10% for the debt now because they can get, you know, even higher returns in AI space. And suddenly your entire business model goes sideways on the basis of cost of capital going what you think is haywire relative to the stability of your business, but given kind of what's happening in the sector next door, is actually totally rational. And it's the market doing its work of shifting capital towards its best and greatest use.
All right. And then the riptide, I think we both agree, likely has started. What is the moment when people look back at shore and they say, uh-oh, I didn't realize how far we've come. What's the aha moment here?
You mean for like rest of like industry slash world?
Yeah, it's like what's the moment when, you know, there's the SaaS apocalypse when, you know, everything re-rated rapidly. Is there a triggering event in your mind here where all of a sudden things re-rate rapidly, or is it a slower burn?
I think within direct tech space, I'll be curious to see what happens with Apple, which is aggressively not investing. I would say they are aggressively not investing in AI. That's like their strategic stance. Within broader industry, somebody posted to me saying, you know, that take basically that AI is going to rob all the funding from everything else is highly consensus and totally priced in. And I could not disagree with
never,
that.
It's never
more.
Priced in.
Well, it's, I think probably that person who, and I can't remember who was, someone who I think is probably, well plugged in and kind of has good considered like state of the world within their particular circle of information. My interpretation of that is within kind of like the valley, within tech space, people are already thinking, oh, that's definitely going to happen. But, you know, step back to the people who are actually making real capital allocation decisions, like the trillions of dollars in capital allocations, not the tens and hundreds of billions of dollars capital allocation decisions within finance. And I think it's not at all kind of accommodated or plugged in. So I think you could see, for instance, the corporate bond yields, which are now above 6% on the BAA, you could see those like break out to the upside because the AI guys will happily be willing to pay. And that will catch a lot of businesses offsides. And that's those are the kind of moves that happen as kind of like these allocators are like, oh, actually, compute as an asset class seems like a good idea. And gosh, does it underwrite well? I'm going to take money from here to there. And there's so much inertia within kind of the allocation game and these consultants. It just takes time to really convince people. They see it right now and they say, well, this is obviously not a thing because if there were really $1 million bills sitting around on the ground, people would be picking them up. And then meanwhile, like investors are like, yes, I will pick these up. And they're like, no, those aren't real. And then when the person takes the bill and actually spends it, they're like, maybe it's real. And then 3 years later, they're like, we should do a whole strategy around allocating to this thing. You know, I just think it takes, there's like so much, people are very, 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 very happy. In fact, would prefer that this were not occurring. It makes life uncomfortable if you're doing something else. And so, and I think the Wall Street writ large, Wall Street, including the German banks, including everybody, can live in that space for a while. And it takes people beginning to get, to really lose things to then say, hey, we have to do something different. I don't think people are really losing things yet. I think you'll see a bankruptcy that is like, what? How did they bankrupt? They were like a fine business. You know, so I think you'll begin to see that stuff where it causes, you know, then, you know, allocators get fired and the new guy comes in saying, we have to change our whole strategy for this. This is like a multi-year process. It's not, even though it's readily underwritable, I think on the AI side, I think in the broader allocator space, so many people can be like, well, it's changing so quickly, who knows, that they are happily living in blissful, happy ignorance and they have to get, you know, limbs chopped off before they actually truly begin to try to price it in.
All right. Moving on. That's a good summary. Exciting. Where are your floaties out there? figure index.
I'll offer one more thing just to, like, you know, of the people who are betting heavily on this, like Elon Musk. So $100 billion into Starbase, which is going to support an absurd number of launches, but also, you know, on a fully, the Terafab, which is to basically fab the chips that he needs for these satellites, as well as for his robots, you know, on a officially announced basis is above $100 billion in kind of like how much investment will go in. But to get to a terawatt a year, Musk claims he'll need $1 trillion of capital into the facility. So then that would exceed the interstate highway system in terms of the scale of the investment that it will motivate.
And that ratio is, I think, useful for people to keep in mind, which is launch is exciting and that's where the rockets are, but it's full of satellites, which cost a lot of money, which are full of computer chips, which cost even more money, and solar panels, which are big and require a lot of investment as well.
Right.
So,
well, it's like he can cost reduce all the other parts except for the chip part, and that becomes the majority actual part of the cost of the satellite. So then it's natural to be like, well, how can we solve this chip issue? I'm going to try to build some myself, or I'm going to exclusively partner with NVIDIA, who is, you know, sees me as like the infinite demand generator for chips. And so it will give me a better deal than they're giving to competitors to get installed into these things. And so then have a cost advantage, not just on like launch versus terrestrial, but even against other AI satellite players who I'm sure will emerge if and as this demonstrates to be a good way to do AI.
Well, that's only if they can get a good return on capital, which might be hard if they don't have a launch vehicle. But enough of the AI riptide. Index from Figure AI coming out of Stealth. One of the biggest problems we've seen with all robotics companies, or the hurdle that they're trying to clear, is real world data. This is a nice little hardware piece you wear on your head, and then they will pay you to do everyday tasks. Brett.
Yeah, you get paid to do your own dishes, Sam.
Yeah. Will they pay me to put it into the dishwasher? Probably. What do you think of this strategy?
I think it's smart. I mean, I'll lay out the strategy, then I'm curious to hear your perspective on humanoid robots. But it's twofold. One, I think in humanoid robotic space, companies are suffering from a dearth of data. If you go and visit them, you know, you see people wearing like VR headsets and kind of doing stuff to train the robots, or teleoperating the robots in order to train them. And then you turn them on autonomously and they can kind of do the thing. But if you stick them in front of a different coffee table, can they still clean it off? I mean, that's the challenge here. And so you need kind of data from a diversity of environments so that you can train the software to work generalizably for the robots. That's what you need. How do you get that data? Well, in the robotaxi case, in Tesla's case, actually they're living the dream because their customers are buying the cars and driving them around and generating data for them. In humanoid robot space, you need a similar mechanism by which to get data. Here, they're trying to get people to wear headsets so they can get the data. And they're trying to, the second reason to do this is they're trying to onboard customers onto the demand side platform for this task labor. So not only could you get paid for doing your own dishes, but maybe if you're willing to be paid for doing your own dishes, you'd be willing to go to somebody else's house and do their dishes and get paid. And so then the customer who wants somebody to do their dishes, and this is probably more small business than a customer that would do this, is willing to hire in that labor at a less than market price because, you know, part of the labor wage rate is being filled in by what Figure is paying for kind of the underlying data. And so then that gets distribution for an eventual future world where the customer is hiring in somebody to do the dishes and, hey, maybe it's a robot rather than a person that shows up. And so kind of like robot as a service distribution happens through the app as well. Okay, so that's kind of like the strategic framing. Sam, how long do you think from like step A here to step Z of like commercialized humanoid robot that shows up on robotics as a service demand?
I think that is in the 10-year time frame, I'll say. But I think the idea, the image everyone has in their mind of the end state of humanoid robots, I think is much further than we want. And simultaneously, that does not mean that there will not be incredible things along the way. And so the analogy that I have been making is Mars, right? SpaceX founded in 2002 with the goal of making life multiplanetary and revolutionizing space. And it is 2026. We are not on Mars. We are not going to Mars. We're going to go to the moon first. And then we will make our way to Mars and it will be glorious. And along the way, SpaceX is an incredible company doing incredible things, causing an AI riptide that is going to bankrupt lots of people potentially out there. And I think the same thing is true for humanoid, which is the seeds are being planted today, but the harvest is in a business cycle plus for true generalizable.
But how can you believe that when I like turn on my X feed and I see robots, you know, beating or at least approaching the 100-yard dash speed of Usain Bolt and kind of almost breaking the long jump record, and these things seem hyper capable. They can do backflips and stuff.
Yes. And that's why I think there's going to be incredible businesses and automation improvements. Just the generalizability of it, I think, is extremely difficult. And I think even robotaxi is a great example here, where Tesla has the flywheel. This is the flywheel that everyone is chasing. And they are still on the verge of scaling that rapidly. And I think for the real world data collection, there's far more inputs and diversity of edge cases in the real world than there are for driving, where you've got two inputs, accelerate or turn. I guess all just accelerate. That's all forms of acceleration. Than you do have for a humanoid robot. And so I think it's just the level of difficulty here is tremendous. And so that's really going to take more time than people want. And that's not me being bearish on robotics. I think, as I said, there's going to be incredible businesses in the near term. But this, you know, humanoid robot replacing a human is something that I would not hold my breath on.
Yes, it seems obviously massively complicated, even from the context perspective of like with the Teslas that are on the road today or the Teslas that are operating unsupervised FSD, they are taking in the exact sensor data through this, you know, distributed data collection network that is ultimately going to be the sensor data that is then used to kind of run FSD unsupervised or the robotaxi system. Whereas if you just are paying somebody to wear a camera on their head, you're hoping to gather from the camera like pose of hands and the pressure, like you don't get any like data readout on pressure sensitivity or, you know, lower body kind of like posture. So it seems like the data, the ability to collect data here is much narrower and lossier and compressed, which I think makes the problem of generalizable software for humanoid robots even harder than an already hard leap from a heavily constrained road system that's basically designed for cars to operate safely on it, even with idiot drivers, into basically the open space of environments and households and everything else, where if you have a kid, you know, it's like they spend a lot of time figuring out how to fall and where how to trip and everything else. You know, I just think it's a wildly, wildly hard problem. So
that's right. And we're facing a fertility crisis. So, you know, the net promoter score is low on the human version. What's it going to be on the robot version? No, but I do want to say, I'll reiterate, because I think people often misunderstand this. this does not mean that robotics is not an exciting place to invest, because and I'm interested in your take here, but the framing we've done, really there's two vectors driving robotic adoption. There's the upfront cost of the robot, and there's the difficulty of retraining it. And both of those are collapsing in real time. Those, I don't think, are a decade away. So that's huge, and there's going to be wild adoption and implementation of automation, I think, in the next handful of years here. I just think it's that end state is very different than the intermediate steps.
Yeah. I think that the generalizability is obviously like a word that can mean a lot of different things. And, or as in, it's almost like AGI, where, you know, think of the AI enterprise software things we have, and even the agents that are doing computer use. And sometimes you can watch them with Grokbot kind of tool around, and kind of awkward, you know. And that's also a very like constrained kind of like, there's only so many things you can do there. So I think that there will be, even humanoids will be pretty narrow, purposely scoped at first. And it's a question of like, how big can that scope be commercially to enable the flywheel to really get going? I don't think we are in the kind of like self-perpetuating flywheel space here yet by any means, because you would, you know, see commercial, not novelty, installs beginning to ramp. And we're still a ways away from that.
And then I thought an interesting point from the All In pod was, right, China's hosting the Robot Olympics and everyone's excited about it. Even people in the U.S. are excited about it. But would the people in the U.S. be excited about it if it was in the U.S.? Or would it be protested and NIMBYed? And the general attitude towards advancement, I think is, you know, I don't think we need to dive into it here, but I do think it's worth thinking about, and the impact of optimism for the future and the way that can change the course of history for nations.
Yeah, I think robotaxis is like in an underrated way extraordinarily important on that basis. Mm-hmm. Those are going to be
as
useful.
Making the day-to-day life of everyone way better and safer.
They're just going to make, the average American adult spends an hour a day driving. So every single convert is just going to feel so much better. I know with FSD supervised, like my life is much better, much, much better. And so I think that kind of like as a, what are we getting for letting these data centers be installed? Like people will conflate those two to some degree. I also think that the politics on data centers is beginning to turn at the margin because people understand.
on that, X.
Well, X is upwind of culture. So yeah, yes, yeah. On X. But I think, you know, I think it also, that also influences, you know, kind of like the left and right commentary, which then like pushes into some of the political people. And, you know, so I do think that the turn, you can see the derivative turning there. And so I think it'll proliferate downstream.
I agree. All right. We'll see everyone next week when AI models are 10% cheaper.
ARK Investment Management LLC is an SEC registered investment advisor. ARK, Wolf Financial, and Public are separate, unaffiliated entities and do not have a relationship with respect to any company marketing or selling the products or services of the others. ARK, Wolf Financial, and Public make no representation or warranties regarding and expressly disclaim any responsibility or liability for any acts, omissions, losses, or damages of the other entities or their affiliates, officers, employees, or agents. No company shall be liable for any indirect, incidental, consequential, or special damages arising out of or in connection with this podcast or its contents. The information provided in this show is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision and is subject to change without notice. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK, and investors should determine for themselves whether a particular investment management service is suitable for their investment needs. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK and or show guests and are not endorsements by ARK of any company or security or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in this show may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARK's current views and assumptions and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statement. ARK assumes no obligation to update any forward-looking information. ARK and its clients, as well as its related persons, may, but do not necessarily, have financial interests in securities or issuers that are discussed. Certain information was obtained from sources that ARK believes to be reliable. However, ARK does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information obtained from any third party.